Hi, I'm Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening and for following me on Twitter, at Paul Harris Show. If you're a regular listener, you may have heard me talking about my tennis days, which ended about 3 years ago. For about 10 years before that, I had played doubles tennis three times a week, loved it, was in pretty good shape. But then I developed a problem with my Achilles, and once I overcame that, I screwed up my knee. And because I didn't want to go in for surgery on both of those things, I pretty much have given up the game and, of course, gone back to my normal sedentary lifestyle. My next guest went exactly the other way, from the sedentary lifestyle of a newspaper editor to a competitive tennis player. And he did that in his late 50s and especially early 60s. And he's written about that experience in a new book called Late to the Ball: Age, Learn, Fight, Love, Play Tennis, Win. His name is Gerald Marzorati, and he joins me now. Hi, Jerry. How are you today?
I'm great. Nice to be with you.
Nice to have you on the show. How did you not get your body screwed up the way I did?
Well, the answer to that question and a lot of others is good luck. But I do have arthritis in both of my knees and bursitis in my shoulder and actually arthritis in my hands, too. Like my mom, I have pretty early onset arthritis, though exercising is supposed to be good for it, so there you go.
Yeah, I want to read something you write on page 138 of the book. Holding a tennis ball out in front of you at thigh or waist height, rotating your shoulder joint in a natural upward tossing, and releasing the ball to send it a few feet above your head would seem to be the easiest thing you can do on a tennis court. And you're still standing still and in complete control, as you're not at any other moment in the unfolding of a tennis point. But when you're 60... your non-dominant arm has been doing a lot of nothing for a long time. Your muscles are smaller and weaker than they are on your dominant side, and your sense of control is a lot less. How do you overcome that, Jerry?
Well, I guess you really never do overcome it. But I think what you do is gradually, if not steadily, improve. And I think, you know, my biggest takeaway through this adventure and what I would hope to impart to others is taking up something difficult and getting a little better at it a little bit at a time is a really, really rewarding experience, because the truth is, by the time we're in our 60s, I'm 63, we're not getting better at much of anything anymore. And it's a way to sort of have a story to tell yourself amid all the other stories of your diminishment and loss and whatnot. It's a way to have a story that's actually getting a little better. I am better than I was. I'm a better tennis player than I was 6 or 7 years ago. And, you know, I still work at it and still work to improve. And, you know, there's a lot of... So there's that, and then there's the whole sort of world I entered and buddies I made and things like that that has also been in just really, really fun and satisfying.
Now, do some bragging here. You're playing in the over-60s circuit. How good are you?
Oh, my God. When I'm at the level of – in the book, I go out and play in these national tournaments, and I get slaughtered. But you know, it's there's a difference I learned, I think, between being humbled and being humiliated. I was humbled by these fellas, but you know, these are guys who were high school state tennis champions in their teen years and went on to play tennis at D1 colleges, and a lot of them are still tennis coaches. So you know, they're in their early 60s, and I'm in my early 60s, and I have to marvel at the shape these guys have kept themselves in, and they were incredibly decent and generous in my little quest, you know, after beating me down. But they, you know, there are things that you learn, in anything in life, and especially in a sport. There are things you learn when you're 7 or 8 years old that are meant to be learned when you're 7 or 8 years old. And, you know, I'll never have the footwork that these guys have, because it's actually better to learn how to take those tiny little tennis steps when you're 7 or 8 as opposed to those long, basketball and baseball strides that I took, which are pretty useless on a tennis court.
Yeah. So here you were playing against guys who probably had been playing tennis for 50 years, and you've been playing it for 50 months.
Exactly.
Are you?
I'll tell you this. Those guys struggle with their – I mean, I struggled to stay on the court with these guys, but those guys struggle with the fact that they're never as good as they used to be.
Right.
Now, there's one – that's one – I have many problems once I step on a tennis court, but that's not one of them.
So when they can't get to a ball, they're mad at themselves for not being able to do that anymore. When you can't get to a ball, you figure, well, I wasn't supposed to get to that ball.
And maybe someday I will.
Wimbledon started yesterday, and as a matter of fact, one of my colleagues walked in during the commercial break, and we have it on here in the studio, and he said, oh, this must be the first week of Wimbledon because the grass at the baseline isn't completely worn down yet.
That's right.
As it will be by next week. Have you played on grass as well as hard courts?
Well, I did, and I played twice in a national grass court singles championship and in a doubles championship, where in the doubles I finally won some games.
Uh-huh.
Which was really fun. Grass is it's rare, and so I've only played on it twice. It's incredibly tricky in terms of your shots, the ball skids and things like that. However, if you have knees like mine, grass is just—it's you could play on it all afternoon. It's sort of spongy and gives, and you don't have those like sore joints the next day. So I kind of get it. I kind of get why it must have been wonderful to play on it when everybody played on it back in the day, but it's obviously the upkeep of a grass court is really expensive, so you see very few of them anymore.
Yeah, I've never had a chance to play on one. I don't even know if we have one here in the St. Louis area. I've only played on hard courts, and when I've been down in Florida, I played on their faux clay courts.
Right.
That are made out of those little pebbles, and
the
balls
are
very, very hot.
Also better for you than a hard court. The hard courts are the, you know, I was just out on a book tour in Northern California. In California, it's all hardcore tennis. And, God, the guys, I was playing with guys who were 10 years younger than me, and, you know, all you heard about was knee replacements and, needing cortisone shots and all this stuff. That, you know, it's like playing on cement. You're not meant to bounce around on cement at a certain age.
Okay, that'll be my excuse.
I got to figure out a way to get you back out there. You've got an Achilles, you said, and a knee?
Yeah, the Achilles is okay now, finally, but the knee is bad. I just don't want to have the surgery, and I fear that I'm going to have to eventually because it's not good.
And that's the deal. You've had other opinions. They all say they got to operate on you.
Oh, no, I could go through the rest of my life never playing tennis again.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
No,
I just wonder if there are these other met guys who get these some kind of silicone injections and things like that. I don't know. There seem to be other things. I understand not wanting to go through the surgery route, but...
Well, we'll see.
Do you miss it? Do you miss the tennis?
I miss it enormously. I said, I played three times a week for 10 years, so it was a big part of my life. And
that's about... I'm three or four times a week now, and even if I'm off on business or something for a week or two and I haven't played, I miss the game itself and I miss the guys I played with and, you know.
Is there money in seniors tennis?
Is there money?
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's, I'll tell you, there is an international, it's hard to believe, but there's an international circuit of really top guys and they've gone into their 70s and 80s and there's actually, the U.S. Tennis Association, the USTA, funds these senior Davis Cup teams that travel the world. I was playing with some guy after, and he was saying after this tournament I was in, he said, we're going to Istanbul with the 65 and over Davis Cup team, and we're bringing our wives, and we're staying for 2 weeks. So I don't know if that's not prize money, but that seems like a pretty good deal.
That sounds pretty good to me, absolutely. You know, there's also that that Champions League that Jim Courier runs where he and Philip Poussis and Michael Chang and John McEnroe are all part of that.
That's right.
And they've got a TV deal for that. Here's what makes me sad, though, when I see that on TV. There's nobody in the stands. They draw only a couple of thousand people. They came here to St. Louis and played at the Family Arena a couple of years ago, and I don't think there were 2,500 people there.
It's tough. I don't have an answer for that. I mean, obviously some of these other tournaments. I mean, you know, Wimbledon has become Wimbledon's on so many people's bucket lists now that you can't afford a ticket. It's become like the Super Bowl or something. People want to check it off that they've been there. So there are these tournaments that are, you know, you can't find a ticket. And then there's these others that no one wants to go watch. But I do think people want to play. And I think that it's been really rewarding for me going around the country these last 4 or 5 weeks to see in so many places, you know, older men and women are playing tennis, and it's, you know, it's good for them, and they're having a social time, and they're having a good time, and they're keeping themselves in shape, and, you know, so that part of it's pretty good.
Let's talk about the pros for a second, because I know you're a fan as well as a player, and I mentioned that Wimbledon is underway. In fact, out of the corner of my eye, Serena's playing right now against some unknown. You say in the book that she may be the greatest woman athlete to ever play a sport, certainly the greatest woman tennis player I've ever seen. What about Martina Navratilova?
Yeah, I know these across the generations, comparisons are always tough. I just think that the strength and power and will that Serena has is just in a class by itself. I just feel like she is playing a game that these other players, as deft as they were, would have a very hard time dealing with the power she brings to the women's game. I mean, I think she changed the game in some ways.
I agree with you. Although she did not do well at the Australian, you know.
I think this. She's
made it to the finals.
She's young by my terms, but she's not young by tennis's terms.
Yeah, what is she? 34 now.
34, and one of the things that's fascinating to me and somewhat reassuring is that it's still hard for even these seasoned pros to fend off nervousness and the yips and all the things that bug us when we're trying to serve to win a set. They do the same things, and they, she was under so much pressure, I think, last year to try to win that in-year calendar Grand Slam, and also to tie Steffi Graf for the number of Grand Slams that she's won. That it's clearly that pressure is really tough, and it'll be interesting with Novak Djokovic. He's got if he wins Wimbledon, he'll come into the U.S. Open with a shot to be the first male tennis player to do this since Rod Laver did it in 1969, and that's just a lot of pressure. A lot of media attention, a lot of stress.
You're absolutely right. You know, when we talk about tennis, Serena is basically the only female tennis player that most people can name. On the men's side, you might know Djokovic. You certainly probably know Federer and maybe Andy Murray and maybe Stan Wawrinka and those. But no Americans are in that male discussion. Why don't we have male tennis stars in this country anymore?
Well, that's a question that a lot of people ask, and I think the answer's complicated. One is that the game itself has become such a global game in this century. You have the idea that the best player in the world is from this tiny ski town in Serbia. Tennis. In my childhood was really a kind of Anglo-American game. It was the Australians and the Americans and a couple English players and then some other players here and there, but that was pretty much it. Now there are tennis players everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, part of the answer. The other part of the answer is, if you're a really great male American athlete and you look over that sports landscape, if you're the 35th best tennis player in the world, which is saying something, you're probably breaking even financially with your travel and your coaching and all that. Mm-hmm. And then you stop and think, if I'm the 35th best NBA player, I am making a fortune. And the same holds true in baseball. you sort of get the tennis's problem is that if you're in the top 5 or 10, you can really make a lot of money on endorsements and prize money and whatnot. But I think golf does a better job of spreading the money around. You know, you're a top 80, top 90 golfer, you're still doing pretty well. It's not true of tennis, and I think that just keeps a lot of, you know, it takes a long time to get good, and then unless you're really at the very top, it's just not remunerative.
Very, very good points. Here's a guy who knows his tennis as both a player and a fan, Jerry Marzorati. His book is called Late to the Ball, Age, Learn, Fight, Love, Play Tennis, Win. It's that last word that gets to a lot of people.
Well, I hope the meaning is that you win, that I think I've won at life in some ways by doing this. I think I've gotten myself in really good shape, and I've had a lot of fun, and I've met a lot of people and made a lot of friends. I'd like to win a few more matches now and then, though.
Well, I have an uncle who played into his 90s.
Oh, God bless him.
And I hope you can do the same. It's a pleasure talking to you, Jerry. Thanks for joining me here today.
It's so much fun. Thanks for having me. Take care.
You're welcome. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.